You're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On today's show, two of my favorite things, beer and coffee. First up, Alex Delaney, assistant web editor, and Brad Leone, our test kitchen manager. And they're kind of like our two craft beer geeks here at Bon Appetit. And they kind of try to school me and convince me of the ways of craft beer. And then second, Emil Stonick, our associate editor, along with John Feldman, East Coast director for Stumptown, to talk one of my true passions, iced coffee and cold brew. And I drink so much of it every day, year round. So I'm very psyched that we got to sit down with Emil and John and talk cold brew. Here we go with Alex Delaney and Brad Leone talking craft beer. Delaney, your first podcast?
This is my first time on the Foodcast, and I'm, you know, I'm pretty honored to be here.
Wait, have you been on other podcasts?
I've been on some very unprofessional podcasts that never saw the light of day, or if they saw the light of day, maybe three people listened to them. So,
all right, well, welcome to the Bon Appetit Foodcast, and Brad, welcome back.
Thanks, sir.
So we're talking craft beer today. Well, first of all, is that the correct phrase? Am I talking correctly?
You know, that's a tender subject.
Because when I was coming up, it was always like microbrew. And then at some point it became craft beer, but well, what else would you call it? I literally don't know, so school me here.
There's all this contention to, you know, if it's a microbrew, what, you know, number of barrels produced as a microbrew? How small is of a brewery, you know, does a brewery need to be considered a microbrewery? And the answer is that there is no answer. And to be considered craft beer, you have to produce under a certain amount of barrels per year. There is the American Craft Beer Association, I believe they're called, and the problem is that number changes every year. Mm. It's not a consistent number. I mean, it is for one calendar year, but then the next year, a big brewery starts making more beer, and they're like, we still want these guys to be called craft. So craft beer doesn't necessarily have a true, honest definition, which is in itself kind of strange.
So, what I find interesting about you guys, and I dare say even inspiring, is that you approach craft beer with a zeal and a sense of focus that's impressive. Like, you guys, can I say you collect the beer? Or it's like you really search out various beers, you try them together, you compare notes.
Short-term collection.
Yeah, short-term. That's good. Yeah, you're not aging them.
No, not all of them, no. And, so it just started, you know. Well, we do it. We drink them here sometimes at work, you know, a little later in the day, and
later in the day, like 3:30. No, and I've come by on Fridays in the test kitchen, and you guys have a bunch of beer set up.
Yeah,
and you guys, you and Brad wrote a piece in our August issue, the Great Vermont Beer Run, which I can't remember when I greenlighted this story. I'm surprised I did. We sent the two of you guys to Vermont,
Burlington,
to go drink beer for 3 days.
Yep.
As part of your job. But I thought it was a fascinating piece, that having to go search out these breweries to taste their beer that you're not going to get in New York City.
Yeah.
And I get, I'm assuming, and then there was an element of food that went along with the beer. And also, I imagine a pretty good sense of community once you go to these breweries.
Well, that's just it. It is kind of community driven, you know, and it does tie in food. When people who are making really good, you know, kimchi, or really good, you know, farmer for pork, they all kind of know each other, and they all seem to get together. And and work together. And it's neat that it is only available in certain spots, you know, because of the distribution factor. And I think that's a good thing, you know. Maybe it hurts them. Maybe they wish they could get a little bit more out, but it keeps the control.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's taste some beer. And I've got more questions for you. But what are we tasting, Delaney? How are we doing this?
We've got a few things. Yeah, I'll just do some small pours for you guys.
All right. He's opening his little. You have Brad. Where'd you get this? You have like a little wheelie.
Yeah,
cooler.
Sometimes when we have to go pick up certain things, I'm not a big fan of the wheelie cooler. Uh-huh. Or the, you know, because then you gotta take an elevator or carry. I just do the book pack, like the backpack.
Yeah.
But they're good to have, you know, shopping in the city. It's insulated.
All right. So this is a beer that you may have had before.
This is a beer that ruined my college years.
There you go.
So it was at Cal, University of California, Berkeley. And like you couldn't get a regular beer. And it was either Anchor Steam, which we're about to try, or Sierra Nevada. I'm like, can't I just get a regular beer? And like, I couldn't. So I'm going to try this as an adult again and see how it goes. All right. So are we just giving it a taste?
Yeah, give it a taste.
a little bitter.
A lot of bitter.
Yeah. A lot of bitter.
In a good way, though, right?
This just strikes me as not refreshing. I find this the opposite of refreshing. Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
It's not that crisp, clean, like hot day, just mowed the lawn. Let's crack one of these. Some people, sure. This is more like you're sitting down watching a game. This could be your cognac kind of thing. Like some of those bigger beers that are kind of bitter and big flavor that aren't like you're out fishing on a boat and just drinking eight beers.
Yeah.
What is this, an IPA?
No, this is just it's referred to as a California common lager.
Oh, okay.
So it's a lager.
In beer speak, Alex Delaney, how would you describe this in terms of notes, flavor notes and whatnot?
Flavor notes, I would say I don't think this is a very bitter beer. I think it's slightly bitter beer. And with the lager, to me, the main note is always breadiness. It's like you're maybe smelling a little bit of a fresh baked bread that came out
of
the onion. The malt is for a lager.
This one is not overly hoppy. Is that fair to say?
That is 100% fair to say.
Okay, because there are beers that I'm very hop sensitive to.
Maybe a little more malty.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a malt-driven beer.
It's interesting because you said it's not bitter, but that's also, I think, like, if you're someone who just starts drinking coffee for the first time, you're going to find coffee incredibly bitter.
Sure.
But after you've had, like, 4,000 cups over the next year or two, you're like, oh, this isn't so bitter.
Yeah.
And you certainly, I imagine, become accustomed to it. I guess maybe I just never worked on this to sort of get with this.
You do. It is. I won't say. I'll say it's an acquired taste.
But you have to be willing to acquire that taste.
You have to put a little time into it.
All right. What do we got next?
All right. Next.
Reaching down into the tank.
All right.
Now, are these on ice, Brad, or you just put them in the cooler? Or do you not want this kind of beer super cold?
Some beers, they have a preferred temperature service. Yeah. Sometimes you don't want it super, super cold. Sometimes they prefer it almost room temp. But for the most part, I tend to like my beer cold.
So I should not put it on ice?
My dad would.
What does your dad drink?
Well, he doesn't anymore. But when he did, it was like Bush Light with ice cubes.
Bush Light.
Nice. Like with like 9 or 10 ice cubes. Like it was iced tea. But and I never understood it.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Satisfying.
Also, that's
so we're drinking a can.
Yeah.
So that seems to be a more recent development in the last few years that craft beers have really gotten on the can movement.
Sure.
Correct? Fair enough to say?
100%.
And I've always heard that part of that is the cans don't allow in light, which is good for the beer, correct? Is that fair?
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. So the can is something that breweries are a little hesitant to switch over to now just because they've been bottling for so long. And, you know, if you want to buy a canning machine, it's not a cheap piece of equipment. So there are a lot of companies that will come in and they're kind of like freelance canners, and they'll bring a little truck out back to the brewery and they'll can your beer for you.
Well, why not? What is bottling? You can do it by hand, I guess, if you're super small, right? But I mean, a bottling machine isn't too cheap either.
All right, this is some crazy ass Grateful Dead, Pink Floyd looking prismatic eye. There's a deteriorating skull with like crystals in one of the eyes and prisms, like a rainbow prism shooting out of the crystallized eye above pyramids.
Beer graphics can get a little wild.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. So,
this one you want to smell.
Wow, this is fragrant.
Before
this one's really fragrant.
Super fragrant.
Yeah. Can I say this is really hoppy?
100%.
Yeah. Drives me nuts.
So this beer is actually a collaboration between two breweries.
Between the Grateful Dead and
between
Pink Floyd.
Exactly. No, it is a collaboration between Burial Beer Company in Asheville, North Carolina.
Did you say Burial?
Burial,
like you bury someone.
Yeah, like B-U-R-I-A-L.
What kind of name is that for?
I don't know, but they make some pretty good beer.
why wonder?
And then the other brewery that they collaborated with was a New York brewery over in Brooklyn, Other Half, and they're known for hops and collaborations. Yeah,
And they're also known for 8.5% alcohol, which to put that in perspective, Budweiser is like 4.5-ish, somewhere around there. So this is significantly more.
Two for one here.
It's like a double beer. So when you smell it,
it's like milky looking.
Cloudy.
Yeah. Is that what does that mean? I know what that means in wine. I don't know what it means in beer.
So this means that at the end of the process, it was unfiltered. So there's still a little bit of sediment going on in there.
Oh, God.
Not a Rappo beer.
Wow. So how much – you can drink maybe half a can. You can't drink more than one can of this. This is like a tall boy can. This is like a 16-ounce can?
Yeah, it's a 16-ounce can.
People can drink 6-8 of these.
No.
Yeah.
Stop.
I've done it.
You have not done it. Really? Done it, yeah. You've actually sat down in one night and had a 6-pack of these?
Oh, yeah. Well, not this particular one, but very similar style. Yeah. I mean, I go through phases. You know, in the colder months, I can get away with a little – it will make you fat.
Yeah,
so that is a very
I wasn't going to comment on that. But you don't find this just it's like eating a loaf of sourdough or something.
It is.
It is. It's something that when I had my first IPA, I was like, whoa, what the hell is going on in this glass?
It's syrupy. It's bitter.
What is going on? But now I like this is not. When people think of an IPA, and I think this is why an IPA gets a bad rep sometimes, it's usually an IPA that's been sitting on a shelf for a warm shelf for months.
Does not age well.
Do you know why? Because people aren't buying it.
There you go. And it's when you let an IPA sit around for a while, the flavor of the hops, which is in an IPA, it's the main flavor. It's the main flavor that you taste. It fades, and it turns bitter. So hops are always bitter.
Skunky and bittery.
But when they're fresh, it brings this crazy floral fruit aroma. So like it's definitely
fragrant. I mean,
and there's different types of hops.
It has an almost potpourri sort of quality to it.
And
there's different hops bring different flavors and fragrances.
It's actually interesting. Out on the North Fork, where I'm out a lot these days, you're seeing a lot more hops being grown, and they grow vertically up
big
those.
Big vine. They're beautiful plants. Yeah.
And someone built a huge field with these like giant sort of slanted telephone poles that are stretched across for
a
couple of acres. And it's impressive.
Yeah, it's really cool.
But I mean, it's interesting that you see that in the world of agriculture is that the farmers now know there's money to be made there.
Sure.
That's good business for
them.
There's
a brewery everywhere now.
Yeah, it's really growing because hops used to be grown basically there were three main places in the world they were grown. It was in the UK, in the Northwest, in Washington and Oregon, and in Australia and New Zealand. And those are the three places that, for whatever reason, hopped on the train early and were like,
Did you just make a hop pun?
Oh, wow. That was completely unintentional, but that was fantastic. All right. Yeah, I did make a hop pun.
In America, they weren't growing the hops?
They were, but hops...
Just for the big breweries?
Exactly. There's two schools of thought here. One is that you...
I never thought a podcast about beer was going to be so serious.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like...
It can be serious.
Professor
or it can
Delaney
be
over
completely...
here. Yeah.
Oh, man. You can go into hops thinking this, like if you want people, some people think the best hops are the ones that are grown by the huge farms because they've been doing it for so long and they're giving you a product that you know is going to be fantastic.
It's consistent.
But then there's another school of thought that says, you know, anyone can grow hops if you're in the right climate and you have the right type of soil. And all these small farms are starting to pop up. And there's kind of like a divide with brewers right now. Are you going to try the smaller hops that you don't necessarily know are going to give you a consistent flavor and support the little guys? Or are you going to stay with the big farms and get a hop that you know is going to have a certain flavor?
Well, they're doing both a lot, too.
Yeah.
How often are the breweries, the small breweries, how often do they embrace inconsistency in the way that a winery will, that one vintage to the next, the wine changes?
A lot of places are proud of it.
100%. Yeah.
The variation.
That is not exactly the same all the time.
Yeah. It's like this year, this batch is going to be a little different. Mm-hmm. It's like it's almost people get, if it's a really good brewery that they have a following, they get excited for it. Because, all right, say they're doing beer A again, and it was delicious, and they're going to do it next year. But it's got some chance that, you know, we're using a little bit of a different hop or something. Where it'll be, they know it's going to be good. It's just going to be a little different.
All right, Delaney, are you on Snapchat these days or Instagram stories?
There's a battle in my mind right now.
What's your Snapchat handle?
My Snapchat handle is at Alex, A-L-E-X, _ Delaney, D-E-L-A-N-Y.
And you often chronicle your evenings.
I do.
Saturday and Sundays. And I'm impressed and astounded and a little horrified at the amount of these craft beers you consume in an outing. It's just a lot. B, it can't be cheap. No. And C, you're eating also while drinking all these beers. Like, how do you, I don't, like, explain. How do all you manage?
Right. So, one,
and are you explicitly training. Going out, like, I want to go try X all these beers, or?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I think the thing that I don't show you on Snapchat or Instagram is that, to me, beer, it's all about sharing. So if I, you know, if I open this bottle, like, I'm probably not drinking the bottle completely all by myself. I'm going to have three friends that are over, and, you know, we're going to split it four ways.
There's special beers, and then there's, what would you call them, crushers?
Crushers. Crushables.
Yeah, and when crushables. When you're splitting this beer, is it expected that all the participants sort of chime in with their thoughts about the beer? Or is that...
It depends who you drink it with. I personally, like, this is the most I have talked about beer in this sense in a while, because when I drink a beer, I'll tell you exactly what I think about it, and I don't want to talk about what I think about that beer for more than 10 seconds.
Yeah, let's enjoy it. We can talk about it for a little bit. Yeah, this is great. Talk about what we like about it. But at the end of the day, let's enjoy what we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. You know? At the end of the day, like, beer is not about, hey, let's sit in this circle and, like, all give this critique crazy it. Analysis. Yeah. Beer's about drinking beer with people you like. It's you know, it's about having fun.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that gets a little lost. So when you see me going out and trying beers at all these beer bars and with dinner and whatever, that's what beer is to me. I want to go out with my friends, and I want to enjoy it with the people I like to hang out with. That's what, you know, that's what I think beer should be.
All right, we have another beer?
Yeah.
All right, Delaney, reaching in. All right, I'm gonna finish this guy. Although it's all about
an ounce and a half.
All right, this is a big gun.
Ooh, this has like a champagne.
I brought
cork.
This one in. I picked it up yesterday. This is a special beer.
Hive 56. It's a cool label.
Allagash Brewery out of Maine, I believe. Right,
Portland. They're in Portland, Maine.
And it's got kind of a cool Studio 54 sort of.
And they make some. Label. They make some of my favorite beers. You see them. They have a lot of, like, they're known for their Allagash White. You can get that at, like, most bars.
That is a dark beer. This beer is not white.
Doesn't taste dark, though.
Yeah.
If that makes
sense.
When you say some of my favorite beers, it seems like there's so many of these breweries out there now, and you just kind of keep tabs in the head.
Yeah. You kind of, and it's like this. I didn't know this beer existed a year ago. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you taste it, and then, like, maybe in a year I'll be over it, or it won't be available.
So ale, I'm reading the label, High 56. Love this label.
Yeah.
Very cold. Ale brewed with honey and, wow. I can't even read that word. Can you read that word? last word?
Oh, yeah. The Brettanomyces?
Brettanomyces, yeah. So
explain.
Okay, so the big trend in beer right now is brewing with these bacteria that used to, brewers hated them. They didn't want them to get into our beer. Brad's in a good place right now.
Oh, yeah.
Brad's in a good place right now.
That's a $15 bottle.
And where'd you get it from?
A liquor store in Hoboken, New Jersey.
Okay, so, all right.
So Brettanomyces, it's a bacteria, and it very much like a natural wine. It'll create this kind of, like, funky-ish flavor.
Ooh.
And it's not something that people are used to with beer.
Sour?
Yeah.
But that's kind of vinegar. Like,
they age it. So they'll brew it with their yeast in like a stainless steel barrel, and then they'll age it. This one's aged for, I believe, 18 months in an oak barrel with that bacteria.
But much more than the other ones, has a wine-like quality.
Yeah,
well, that's wine, vinegary sort of.
It brings
sour.
Up a funny thing that I was talking about last night. This bottle costs, it's 12.7 ounces, which is not a lot. That's like, so it's pretty much $14 for a pint, a glass of beer. But no one really makes, you know, you would go out. And so if you wanted to get three of these, it's going to cost you $45. And it's really good. It's really special. No one really makes a big stink about buying a really good bottle of wine for $45.
Yeah, or even less, because a bottle
or
of wine is not that many ounces. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Three of these, you're probably getting, you know, a little bit close to a bottle of wine.
More than.
Yeah, for $40, $45, $40. And this is a beer, you know, you could sit there and drink it by yourself, but this is a nice beer to share.
Now, let's talk about beer and food. Of the beers we've just drunk, we started off with the
Anchorstein,
which ruined my college years. then we've got this Prismatic Eye situation happening.
Double IPA, yeah.
Double IPA, because one IPA is just not enough.
It's never enough.
High 56, which is wine-like. Of these three, which of these would you prefer to eat food with, and which of these would you prefer to just drink on its own?
That's a good question. I'm a little picky with eating beer with eating because not all of them, it doesn't do it for me. It doesn't cut my palate. It doesn't really refresh a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some beer that I do enjoy with food, like the one I was talking about before, the Goza. It's almost like a beer kind of spritz. It's very refreshing and it's clean. It's a little salty. It kind of cuts the palate. It's very easy to eat with. Some of these other beers, I love beer, but I want to drink that. I want to drink before I eat and then eat. I'll have wine.
Wine, yeah.
Yeah, but for some reason, a lot of beers I don't really enjoy eating with.
Well, you're skirting the question, Brad. Which of these three beers would you like to have dinner with?
Probably the last one that we're drinking here, this Hive 56 from Allagash. Just because it's special.
I agree with Brad.
And it's sippable, you know, and it's just, it's like you said, it is kind of more in that wine realm.
Well, it's also interesting when you think about wine. I mean, a typical restaurant pour is what, 5 to 6 ounces?
Right. Mm-hmm.
5.5.
5.5, yeah. So if you have 3 glasses of wine, you're only having a little bit more than a can of beer. And 3 glasses of wine for the average person is a decent amount of wine.
It's a solid amount.
Usually I don't know about you guys, but, you know.
Usually a little higher in alcohol wine.
Yes, that is true.
It definitely is a volume thing because, you know, when the thing that Brad and I always talk about is when you eat, like, ramen. Like, if I was eating a bowl of ramen, there's no way in hell I would want to drink a beer.
Not at all.
Because you have all that broth and all those noodles sitting in your stomach and you're drinking a pint of beer, that's a lot of stuff going into your body.
I couldn't agree more.
But if you're just drinking a glass of wine.
First of all, I don't believe you because B, when you're going to a ramen joint, you're ordering like a Kirin or Asahi or something.
I'll order one beer.
Okay.
When I'm at a ramen place.
I don't do beer or ramen.
So what do you do?
I don't drink really.
Really?
Ramen, that's a whole nother podcast. I mean, I'm there to eat ramen. I'm eating it in 5 minutes and I'm out of there.
Fair enough.
It's like some Japanese business guy.
That's it.
Yeah.
Slurping his noodles
business.
And done.
Yeah.
All business.
but that is funny though. When you think about wine, just from a volume perspective, you're drinking a lot less liquid. So it is easier to drink it with dinner because you're not filling up on anything. And beer is kind of like a commitment. Like, okay, I'm going to put 16 ounces of this into my stomach. It's, you know,
it's a volume thing.
Yeah, it's a volume thing.
All right, besides following Delaney on Snapchat, if someone wanted to get into the craft beer movement, are there websites you would recommend, journals? Like,
sure.
What do you like for the beginner?
For the beginner, there are two things that I say, are, you know, if you want to start, go to beeradvocate.com.
It's a great one.
Really is like, just a wealth of information. It's these two dudes that started it, I want to say maybe early 2000s. I'm not sure the exact year. But every brewery in basically the world has a page and it lists all the beers they do. And people can check these beers in and give little reviews to it and they rate them. It tells you the alcohol percentage, the style, everything you need to know about the beer. And, you know, now I'm going to absolutely declare my beer nerd status. There's beer forums that you can just type on and talk to people about beer.
Wow.
So like people, you know, when someone walks by my desk.
By people, you mean you.
Yeah. So like when you're home alone on a Wednesday night drinking by yourself by your computer in the dark.
Yep. And my roommate comes in and is like, dude, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm talking to people about beer.
And your girlfriend's like, what are you doing? Sorry, just.
Yeah, I mean,
exactly.
I think the best way just get out there. Go on, like, you know, go on a little road trip. Go.
Where do you learn to go? So Beer Advocate's one.
Beer Advocate for sure is one. And then there's, like you were saying, it's craft beer has become so ubiquitous in brick and mortar places. Learning about beer, the way that I learned about beer is talking to people who make beer. If you go into a brewery, it's not going to be a bunch of people who are like, stay away from me. I don't want to see you here. Don't give me business.
They want to give you advice.
They want to give you advice and they want to tell you about what they're brewing because most brewers are proud of the beer that they make.
All right. Top five, and I think you've already mentioned two, but you can again today. Top five craft beer towns if you're going to go to for like a long weekend to go drink.
Well, that's a big
one. All right.
Well, Vermont's a big one.
we'll call Vermont
Burlington,
a town.
Yeah,
Burlington as the epicenter, yeah. And then sort of going on road day trips from Burlington.
Sure.
Yeah. I would say that's one. Burlington. I would say Asheville, North Carolina.
Where you just were.
I was just there.
And that's a town where you can hit up a number of breweries and bars and stuff. And
it's like you can't walk 5 blocks without running into a brewery. If you're in downtown Asheville.
What about Michigan? Ann Arbor?
Michigan makes a lot of really good beer, but the problem is it's very spread out.
Yeah.
If you went to, Traverse City,
town is tough because it's usually only, unless it's like a really big beer town.
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say Burlington, definitely say Asheville. I think Philly is an incredible, I think Philly is one of the best places to drink beer in the country. There are incredible breweries there, but there's a really good beer culture there. Yeah.
What about like maybe Portland?
Portland, actually, and my last...
Both Portland?
My last,
which Portland?
My last two are Portland and Portland.
Yeah, I'd say both.
Portland, Maine might be my favorite beer city.
Some really good ones coming out of
in
there.
In the country.
And also like cities like Burlington and Nashville, they're cities of a certain size. They're easy to sort of get around and navigate.
Yeah.
Everyone knows everybody in those towns.
Yeah. It's definitely, like we were saying earlier, it's a community. And people know, they know each other, and it's a lot of collaboration and
just everyone's access to the internet too. I mean, there's just so much. If you Google it, you can find it,
that's true.
Anything left to taste, Delaney?
Yeah, we
brought your fave.
Mm.
Little American classic.
All right. So we can do a little side by side here.
Oh no.
we've got a couple of Budweisers here.
Do you mean America beer?
I think
one is America and one's Budweiser. Oh no, they're both Bud America.
They're both America.
They're both America.
I didn't know when they changed to the America label for the summer. I didn't know that they kept Budweiser on the side. That's kind of cheating. They should have just totally
replaced.
Yeah,
if you're gonna go, you gotta go for it.
You know, they kind of hedged their bets on that one.
All right, so for our last one, Budweiser will be our little chaser.
Okay, so I'm going to wait. I'm going to taste this other stuff first.
Yeah, we'll taste this guy first.
So this is another crazy hippie-looking psychedelic bottle. What's this one?
This is from a brewery called Wicked Weed. And this is borderline kombucha-esque beer. Yeah, so
this
is
a fruity, vinegary sort of
fruity, vinegary flavor. I'm going to chug the rest of this beer.
Oh, smells great.
And what is it?
So this is a farmhouse ale.
Beautiful color.
Yeah, really nice color. It looks like
kind of a rich amber, kind of reddish.
Yeah. It's a sour beer that is brewed, fermented with blackberries and raspberries. And they do it in, I believe, a red wine barrel.
You get the berries.
Where is it brewed?
This is another Asheville beer.
Oh, that's nice. I would eat that with dinner.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because it cuts.
It cuts. It has a nice high acid level, almost like cider.
Exactly.
Which is a whole other podcast, I imagine, as well.
Yeah. 100%.
That would be my dinner beer.
Right there. I agree.
Yeah. It seems like high 55, 56, excuse me, I think it was interesting, but that's almost like a nice scotch or something, or bourbon after dinner,
Cognac after, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm going to have the Budweiser. It's just going to taste like club soda,
I imagine.
This is the whole setup.
Yeah, if we could go back to the question, which beer would you eat with? I would eat with this one as well.
Literally tastes like nothing. And right? That's why I love it. I could have like 10 of these right now. It's like Emil walking around the office drinking his LaCroix water.
I know.
I'd be drinking Budweiser, not even knowing I was drinking beer the entire time.
I mean, it's good. It is what it is. It's always consistent. There's just something. It's
something lacking.
No, it's just after two. I just don't want it. I just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen. Thank you for welcoming me to your craft beer community today.
Oh, anytime.
Glad
we'll do it again.
To have you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Feldman, you seem to have brought some cold brew, iced coffee stuff with you.
Yeah, I brought a couple of things, and first, I brought the Nitro Can, which is something we came up with last year, and it's been a huge hit. That's it's nitrogenated coffee, cold brew in a can, and
so kind of like a Guinness, but coffee iced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's something that we did
can
on
I,
giraffe. Yeah, go
can
for
I open
a crack.
It?
Well, give it a shake.
A shake.
Yeah, give it a shake.
Wow.
And
it seems dangerous. It seems like you're setting out.
Well, do you have something to pour it in? Because
yes.
You know,
how long do you shake it for?
Yeah, just that's good.
That's
just
good. That's not shaking.
You want to agitate it a little bit. Get it. The reason it's nitrogenated is because it kind of adds a creaminess. Yeah, go ahead.
You just love saying nitrogenated.
Yeah, I just want to keep saying that. Can that be the name of the segment? Actually,
can I try saying it? Nitrogenated.
Yeah.
I was going all like Tom Cruise cocktail. I was doing I was getting excited about the shaking.
You had a good technique, okay. But now you just crack it open and pour it in.
Holy shit. Sorry. I agitated the hell out of that one. Emil, give me your cup.
Yeah. So the reason, you know, this exists for us is because it was something fun we kind of played around with on draft. And, you know, barring kind of from the beer world, you know, what would happen if we did the same thing that Guinness does to beer? If we did it at coffee, and it came, you know, we love the results. It's this kind of creamy, clean,
very
sweet.
Rich.
Yeah, kind of, it adds a richness, but it's really water and coffee. So,
Are you guys the first ones to do nitro coffee?
You know, that's up for debate. We believe we are.
Mm.
Yeah.
So. Iced coffee is actually how I got into coffee. Like, I never drank coffee until I was 30 years old.
That still blows my mind.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. Well, I used to drink a lot of Coca-Cola, and I figured I didn't need Coke and so coffee. But I always, when I was growing up, I would come down to breakfast every morning in D.C. where I grew up, and my parents would be at the kitchen table, mom in her bathrobe and reading glasses on, my dad like in a suit getting ready to go to work, newspaper, drinking coffee. And I was like, wow, that's so depressing. I don't ever want to grow up. Like, it just started to be the most, like, adult thing. And I just equated coffee with being a grown-up. And I was like, that's lame. I don't want to do that. So I never drank coffee.
Like having a minivan.
And then, but then one day, I remember I got my first apartment in New York, I bought an apartment. And I was, like, 30 years old. And I vividly remember this day. It was, like, in April. The Masters was on. I like to watch golf. And I went to Starbucks. And I bought a big iced coffee. And I put in, you know, a fair amount of milk and some sugar. Went back to my apartment. I was just sitting there in my chair watching the Masters. I was like, wow, this coffee stuff is good.
Wow.
And I have a TV and I'm watching golf and like, this is awesome.
You're a grown
such
up.
A bizarre scene. Yeah, the idea of 30-year-old you being like, oh, I'm going to watch golf and drink creamy Starbucks iced coffee.
Which I basically, I could not be any more suburban or grown up than that. But it was like, and since then, every day, I'm almost since then, I now drink iced coffee year round, 365.
It's true. I can confirm that.
You're not alone.
And when did you guys realize that was a thing business-wise?
I mean, the whole way that we've been doing it forever, okay? And the whole way that most people would offer cold coffee in coffee shops was either, you know, taking older coffee that was brewed, you know, cooling it down, putting it over ice, you know, having that as an option for, you know, the consumer coming in. We were doing toddies for a long time, or what we call cold brew, and you know, we were basically doing those in our basement, you know, in the walk-in.
Yeah, I would just say that. Toddies is not as marketable brand.
No,
name as cold brew.
Yeah, we leaped off of that one pretty quick. No, it's a term though. It's a term. We were doing that for a really long time, and it's a pain in the ass. I mean, it takes a long time. It's messy. No one likes to do it. So, you know, Dwayne, our founder, just kind of got excited about the Stubby bottle because he's a big Olympia Brewing Company fan. They went out of business.
Oh, wow.
And
Did they really?
Yeah, they went out of business. And he thought, hey, why don't we get out of the business of doing this in our basement every day and let's grow up a little bit. So that's kind of how we brought it to market. And, you know, now it's a whole category of beverage. But we've always been making it. We just kind of got a little bit – we tried to have a lot of fun and get smarter with how we're putting it on the shelf. And so,
well, in terms of taking it to market, because in our August issue of Bon Appetit, we had a big iced coffee story, and the number of on the shelf iced coffee cold brew brands out there, and I know you guys have been a big pioneer in that, but just, you know, you have like the nitro cans, you have the stubby bottles, you have the cartons, those have like milk in them or whatever.
We have some with milk, we have some that are chocolate milk, we have one that's nut and dairy free.
I mean, you went hardcore. So what coconut. Percentage of your revenue business is now generated from the cold brew world?
I'd say it's about 30%, 20-30%, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a pretty significant part of our business, and you know, obviously we're paying attention to that, but really the demand for it is the bigger story there, which is, you know, we're excited that people are excited about it. You know, it again, it's something we kind of just started to do. It's something to have fun and be a little bit more innovative and not take ourselves so seriously, but we really started a monster.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, yeah. But be careful what you start, because now literally everyone's doing it. And Emil.
Yeah, but see, we like that.
Sure, you do. Anyways, I read something somewhere in an email that you're a Dunkin' Donuts cold brew guy.
Look, all right. No. That is not accurate. I am not a fan of Dunkin' Donuts.
You're not from Boston.
No Dunkin' Donuts cold brew, Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee. Look, I love coffee. I was like, when I was in college, I got really into the third wave coffee, doing pour overs in my house, like trying to convince the coffee shop to do cold brew. And I love cold brew. But at a certain point, I feel like it became like what craft beer is for me a little bit. Like sometimes I'm like, I can really appreciate it and really love it. But there are other times where you just want to drink 30 ounces of iced coffee walking down the street with a big frosty jug.
That's what I love about Dunkin' Donuts. You can't get an iced coffee at Dunkin' Donuts that is less than like 27 ounces.
No. Yeah. Well, and that's my thing though with cold brew is so many of the shops, especially around here, you go and you cannot get a cold brew in less than a 16-ounce serving, which I don't understand because I don't, like, that's the thing. I stopped drinking cold brew in the afternoons because I felt like I was going to have a heart attack. And I didn't want to have,
sissy.
I didn't want to drink 16 ounces of it. I would go in and be like, can I have a 12-ounce iced coffee? And they're like, we don't do cold brew in 12-ounce. I'm like,
see,
why? I'd say, I will pay you the same amount for the 16-ounce. Just put it in a 12-ounce. They look at me like I was crazy. I was like, that's how much coffee I want. Yeah. If I drink more than that, I'll die.
Yeah, I think the big thing here is that now there are choices, okay? And so, you know, people like choices.
Speaking of America.
Yeah, speaking of America. And so the consumer wants choices. It doesn't have to be, we're the cool kid. They're also doing it. They're not the cool kid, or they're saying they're the cool kid. And, you know, it's not really a weapons race. It's a category of beverage that, you know, many different people should be in, and there should be varying levels of quality. And
all right, well, here's my choice that I want, and I'm going to take issue with Stumptown.
Okay, do it.
In general, I'm a big Stumptown fan.
Shots fired.
I'm standing up out of my chair, by the way. Just so everyone knows,
The Stubbies, which are the little stout little bottles that you guys sell, I don't think they're strong enough.
Really?
I want to.
Wow.
No, yeah, they're
you're
not.
You're like a one percenter on that.
I repeat, no. Shots fired.
No, it's not a dark enough. It's not a dense enough brew. If you pour milk into it, and that's always the litmus test for a coffee's sort of richness. Like how quickly does it turn pale, a light blonde? And I think I'm not saying it doesn't have a lot of caffeine. But I want it to be
a thicker brew.
My thing is, and over the years, as Emil knows, when he and I worked together as my assistant back in the day, I'm an iced red eye guy. So I will go get an iced coffee because I don't trust these shops with their iced coffee because I know it's going to look like iced tea, and then I'll add a shot of espresso.
Right.
Not for the caffeine necessarily, but because I like the nutty richness that the espresso imparts on the iced coffee.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, I think you're a red eye drinker. Maybe you're not just a cold brew drinker.
Yeah, but you guys don't sell red eyes and Stubbies.
Right. I mean, we haven't gotten there yet, but I think you at least have a route to where you want to go.
But why not come up with like Stumptown Deep Brew?
Yeah.
You know, and it'll just be
that might be a 2020 rollout for that. No, I think, look, I mean, that's what you like.
My question is, do you guys are there certain roasts or certain beans that you think could go better with dairy versus things that are like ought to be
100%, drank black? Yeah. I think when we're making cold brew, we think about, you know, the crowd pleasing, you know, aspects of a cold brew where, yeah, maybe someone wants a black strong coffee, someone wants to put a little milk and sugar in it, someone wants to just put sugar in it. So we want a crowd pleasing kind of side to it. And therefore we go with a more, you know, traditional type of coffee when it's like more chocolatey, caramelly, you know.
So you're kind of splitting the difference a little bit.
Yeah, but on our beans, you know, there are certain coffees that literally drink like tea. Like this Red Geisha bottle that I brought you guys is a really special small batch offering we did in the bottle. That drinks more like a black tea. Yeah, you could put a little milk in it. I wouldn't recommend it because you want to experience it for what it is.
Right? Feldman, in terms of, I'm curious, take this Stumptown branch at the Ace Hotel here in New York City, which seems like it's never not packed as far as I can tell.
That's true.
Can you give us some numbers in terms of the iced coffee, cold brew, whatever, any iced sort of drink sales during, you know, say May through September compared to the winter months?
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't have the exact number, you know, right now, but I can tell you that there's a huge spike. And, you know, one of the things we've been trying to focus on is innovating beyond just iced coffee or cold brew and, you know, start this whole idea that cold brew can be an ingredient. We're doing a lot more sodas. I think you guys did some coverage on that.
Yeah, let's talk about this because you have a shop in New Orleans. Is it all cold brew there or almost?
It's not all cold brew, but the New Orleans shop, the way we kind of started to think about this is, you know, it's a million degrees in New Orleans most of the year. Yeah. Everyone who's been there knows that. It's thick down there. You know, it's another kind of hot. And so we were thinking about how we were going to roll out the bar there. And of course, we serve hot coffee. But what we thought would be interesting is, why don't we make it a cold brew bar that happens to serve hot coffee?
So you have a drink at your New Orleans shop, and a couple, but the Dwayne Sorensen, named for Dwayne, your founder, your esteemed founder.
The Dwayne,
our friend and founder.
It's a cold brew Arnold Palmer made with a shot of Nitro Hairbender, which is one of your bean blends, citrus syrup, and soda water.
Yeah, it's excellent. Mm, yeah,
sounds good to me.
Yeah, it's really good. It's Oleosacrum, which is made by House Spirits in Portland, Oregon.
And that's like a simple syrup sort of thing?
It's like a simple syrup made with lemon peel, very citrusy, but... I mean, you know, when you're drinking it, it's amazing, and you don't realize it's a coffee drink. But
what is it? What do you think it is? Then?
Yeah, no, it tastes like, I mean, it tastes like a lemon cream soda almost in a funny way.
Well,
yeah,
and then you have
really good
another one, the Endless Summer, which we say is a take on a mint julep, also with a shot of Nitro Hairbender plus mint simple syrup and soda water.
Yeah, so same kind of thing. It's just again using cold brew as an ingredient to give someone kind of a different experience, a different take, and that's more of like, you know, most people basically, you know, hot coffee in the morning, in the afternoon it's maybe cold brew, you sip it on your desk all day. This is kind of an afternoon play for me where I, you know. Yes, I want to get a little lift, but I don't feel like I want to drink a whole cold brew. It's also an interesting way to drink coffee. So, it is the soda alternative.
This being New Orleans, do people ask if they can get like a shot of bourbon in there or vodka?
Well, we don't talk about that on a record.
The question I have is, so I know you guys do a lot of training around, you know, it's like you guys are first and foremost a roastery. Right, and a distributor.
For a coffee roaster, right, yeah.
And, you know, so you have trainings for people because you don't want them to use your beans and then pull bad shots and then make your coffee look bad. So do you have does the same sort of thing apply to cold brew? Like, do you worry at all that people are going to make your cold brew, make their own cold brew out of your beans, do it badly, and then people are going to be like, Stumptown, cold brew is gross.
That's a good question. I mean, I wouldn't say we're worried about it, but one of the big things for us is that when we started making the bottles, the stubby bottles, and they were selling off, you know, like hotcakes off the shelf, we started realizing people want these because they like them, but then we started realizing, well, we could offer a whole layer of convenience to our customers, right? So instead, like, let's get you out of making the cold brew business, right? Like, let's get you out of that business so, you know, you can focus on all the other things. And so really it's more of a convenience that we can offer things like, you know, back of house, we can offer concentrate, or we can offer things on draft, or you can have the bottles in your grab and go, or you can have the cartons in your grab and go, things like that. There's not as much training. You know, we have a lot of materials that we give to folks. And if something tastes off, we're pretty vocal about it, you know. But the trend is that people are getting out of doing that themselves and they're relying on their roaster, which is a good thing.
Right. So you actually sell people, shops, a concentrate that they can buy in bulk and they can
use. Like for food service, you know, a chef-driven restaurant, it's an ease of service.
They might only sell iced coffee to like one very picky customer, say.
Yeah, entire kitchen drinks it, you know, which is really what goes on. Honestly, you know, or you have folks that want to have the taps front and center and showcase that they're innovative and also that they get, you know, that quality needs to be fast for people that are coming through a line. So
it is crazy how much better that now, if you're opening a restaurant of a certain caliber, you can't get away with having like the bad little espresso machine and the burnt like pot of coffee waiting around for like the one person who wants it. Like, you really have to be, you can't have like good wine and bad coffee.
I mean, what was at the old building? What was the espresso coffee machine in the kitchenette with the really creepy name?
Flavia.
Flavia.
Yeah.
I drank a lot of Flavia when I started working at Bon Appetit. I would roll out of bed like 5 minutes before I had to get on the train, get there totally uncaffeinated, and then I would drink like 4 cups of Flavia. Yeah. And I would play around because there were like 2 different roasts. There was like a dark roast and a light roast, and they both tasted the same. It wasn't a K-cup. It was a pouch. It was a pouch that you put like in, and then it inflated with hot water and then exploded and then ripped this awful tasting coffee.
Let's go back there.
Down into a
you know what?
Cup.
I want to go there.
Oh, yeah.
Flavia.
Flavia.
What's the office coffee play here?
So in the test kitchen, we got schooled by Stumptown, right, Emil?
Yep. Yeah, they came in and did it. What's our unit? It's the La Marzocco.
Oh, yeah, And this is great for folks to know about. La Marzocco, which is one of the best manufacturers of espresso machines in the world. They're based in Florence, Italy, but they have a huge business in the United States. They came out with La Marzocco Home, and you have the La Marzocco Linea Mini up there.
Oh, yeah, the Linea.
And so that's more for, like, the person who wants to take it to the next level at home or in an office place or, in a retail setting that isn't really food and beverage driven. Now you're seeing a lot of blending of coffee and retail shops. I'm here to buy a dress, but I'm getting a coffee. Or
it's a barber shop, and
so that's the play. It doesn't require a lot of plumbing and electrical. You don't have to be an expert, but it's a great
unit.
It's
a legitimate machine.
It's a legit.
You're still
machine,
grinding the beans. You're putting the thing in there. It's not just like the pod sort of. Right. I never trust those espresso machines where you just press a button.
That's not a real.
Yeah,
espresso
it takes the
machine.
Fun out of it. Yeah, exactly.
But I think what's cool about that. So you guys trained some people, and then those people have now trained a lot of other people. So you see a lot of our employees going down there and everyone's making their shots
flattering.
Of espresso.
Well, it's cool. I mean, it's cool because I think a unit like that, you have to drink a lot of coffee at home in order for that unit to make sense in your house. Cause you still have to dial it in the morning, which is the process by which you like pull several different shots to time them and figure out if all the calibrations are correct and the grind's right. And that itself is like, you're basically dumping at least two shots of espresso down the tubes. And then if you're doing that to just make one coffee for yourself and then you go to work, it's kind of crazy. But for us, it's like, there are at least a dozen people who are trained on the machine, who know how to use it, who come down most days. And so it makes sense for it to be on all day, for people to just come and,
But I think what separates the kids from the adults are those folks who actually know how to steam the milk properly and pour it. I don't.
I don't drink.
Does
milk
anyone
coffee,
does anyone
though.
Do it in the kitchen?
Oh yeah. Tatushin
like,
does it.
He
used to work at a shop, like a good shop.
And then Vince also, who does all our videos, he used to co-owned a coffee shop.
Right.
So Vince knows how to do the little hearts and stuff.
Yeah. To me, it's about folks who want to be in the kitchen, who want to learn more about cooking. This is a great, I use the term crossover again. This is a great kind of machine for that. I want to have my drip coffee in the morning, but I also want to have a little bit more of an elevated approach to this. Learn about the craft, the skill, entertaining.
Can we talk about how much this crossover costs?
What's that?
How much does this crossover cost?
I think it retails. I need to do some research on that, but I think it's a little over $3,000.
Yeah. It's a nice crossover.
I think it was something more along the lines of $5,000 to $7,000.
No,
if I recall,
really? Yeah. No, I don't think so.
Well, I did that. I interviewed Dwayne for that.
We did
a love letter in the magazine last year, which is when we got the unit. Just talking about how much he loved it, which is cool. And the thing that Dwayne said that, because I remember it being like $7,000 or something like that, and him being like, look, people spend way more money than that on like home entertainment systems and motorcycles and
sofas,
like vintage records and whatever. He's like, I like coffee, so I spent $7,000 on an espresso machine for my house. Like, so sue me. Like, and that kind of put it in perspective for me. It's like, sure, anything is ridiculously expensive if you don't care about it.
I think the real thing here is that folks want to do more with coffee at home, and it's not K-cups are obviously a big giant out there. They're a big force, but more and more people are learning that, wait a minute, I want to grind my coffee every morning before I brew. Even folks who know what a pour over is, being able to do that at home, that's where we see this thing going.
All right, guys, thanks so much for coming by.
Christina Che and Carrie Polis, with editing by Mitra Kaboli and additional help from Lily Sherman, Emma Wartzman, and Ashley Mason. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Greedies. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Plus, right now we're offering an exclusive deal for you, our podcast listeners. You can get 50% off a one-year subscription to Bon Appetit magazine. That's just $6 for 12 issues. You'll also get our current issue, plus an exclusive apron. Go to bonappetit.com/foodcast to subscribe.